So, Jack, do you call it a crick or a creek?
I call it a creek.
You're from West Virginia.
I know, but I'm not from the holler. Hi, I'm Jack.
And I'm Kevin.
This is good company in the car.
Can't help it, the girl can't help it. Can't help it, the girl can't help it.
She walks by, the mean folks getting grown.
So, listening to the podcast, you might think that we go to the casino all the time. But we don't.
We don't.
But we've gone a couple of times in the past week.
I only go with Kevin.
Yeah, you only go with me, and I only pretty much go with you. So we got there. First of all, we've made friends with the bartenders, and particularly Chiquita, who
likes lovely. Jack.
And before we went the other night, and again, we went to the Zento sushi restaurant.
Yeah.
And we go in, that I'm invisible. And I think we mentioned that in another episode.
He's literally said those exact same words before about the staff
every
there.
Time we go there. So we got there last night. It was Saturday, and it was packed. And I made it to the bar before Jack did. We got the parking garage at MGM National.
It's a nightmare.
And she gets up, she kind of smiles wanly at me and gives me my beer. And I'm like, Jack will be here in a minute. She's like, oh, great. but it's you know, airports, that casino is like an airport. You see everything there. People wear everything in that place. But
pajamas are all dressed up.
Some of them are like, do you think you look good?
That you're talking about style and taste.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about, there are people that are there that look like they've just got out of digging ditches. There's people that have got on Armani suits. Yeah, it is just such a bizarre. And then, of course, I order my first drink. My first drink, and I'm sitting at the bar, and I moved my elbow back and hit it, and it went right down my front.
Which got me thinking, would you pay a premium, an insurance premium, on your drinks if you spilled it or it got warm, you could get another one? So if the drink's $4.50, if you pay the insurance, it's $5.50. Would you take out drink insurance?
No.
You wouldn't?
I drink them too fast.
You drink them too fast?
The other thing is if you're good, if the bartenders like you, they'll give you a free drink.
They will give you a free drink. But I don't know. Drink insurance isn't a thing. Life insurance is a thing. And today's episode.
Oh, I did not see that. Oh, that was funny. I literally made God, you got to be believe me face. Oh, that's hilarious. That was smooth.
I thought it would be kind of fun. But again, you can apparently take out insurance on, we don't know this. You're not supposed to be able to take out life insurance on someone else without their knowledge. And yet,
I didn't think you could.
But yeah, and you have insurance for your life. You've got funeral insurance.
Well, no, I have several life insurance policies, and my parents were the ones that grew up with, you have a certain life insurance policy for the purpose of burial.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's usually, I think now it may have grown to $20,000 or something like that. But initially, you know, I got it when I was in like second or third grade.
Uh-huh. Which kind of seems morbid to some people, but it's
smart. Yeah, but that's my parents. Yeah. I mean, we believe in insurance. We're big insurers.
Yeah.
And, you know, mom had a big life insurance policy on dad, and dad had a big life insurance policy on mom. So,
well, our today's villain had life insurance policies on two of his wives and cashed in on both of them.
Well, yes, but okay.
Let's get started. All right. This is a Cold Case Files.
Cold Case Files.
Season 3. Episode 3.
Episode 3.
The Accidental Killer.
The Accidental Killer. And I'm sorry. I'm going to pause. The Good Company in the Car listeners, I could not for the life of me figure out what the little noise was when I was listening to the playbacks on the thing. And I realized it's me hitting the table.
Oh,
I could not for the life of me. What is that sound?
Yes, you bang on the table.
What is it? And I don't mean to do it. And even if you just barely, because it's a wooden table.
And I can't edit them out because you do it while you're talking.
I do it all the time. I know, because I touch the table.
It would be sort of like, you remember you said you had that cassette and you were listening to it and you didn't realize you hit record.
Yes.
And you turned off record real quick. So you know when the song is going along.
Yes.
And you're like, get down, boogie. Ah! Oogie, woogie.
Yeah,
and you have to do it.
Yes.
It would be like that. I would have to splice them out.
So I apologize profusely. I did not realize what the sound was until the last thing.
Some days are worse than others. So,
all right.
Anyway, the episode begins in Wolf Creek, Montana, which is a very small town, and it's June 10th, 1975, and a man comes barreling into the gas station saying that his wife has drowned in Prickly Pear Creek while they were looking for mushrooms.
Do you know what a prickly pear is?
It's a kind of cactus.
Yeah.
Do you know cactus are only native to the Western Hemisphere? They only have them in North and South America, and you'll see them. You'll see movies like depicting like Australian outback with cactus. There's no cactus there. They've transplanted them there, but cactus are native, are endemic to the American Southwest. Yeah, Mexico. So
I can't argue with you on that.
No, you can't.
Okay.
So the couple is Leslie and Dennis Larson. So this is Dan LaFramboise, who is an off-duty Montana highway patrolman. Dennis has told Dan that his wife slipped and fell into the creek, and would he come back and help her look for her? He said he got in to help her up to about here. You got to get up pretty early in the morning to get one past Dan.
He run across the street, and he run up to me, and he hollered, he says, "My wife just fell in the creek and she drowned." He said that he jumped into the creek to try to save his wife and try to find her. And he says, "I jumped in at that first log jam." And he says, "I just about got washed into that." And he says, "I crawled out." And I says, "Pretty deep, huh?" And he says, "Oh, yeah, way up like this." Well, he wasn't wet. And I thought, what's going on here? That doesn't sound right.
So this was where I wanted to know, because he calls it a crick.
Well, there he's out in the middle of the
country.
Midwest country.
But you do say pilla.
Rural.
You do say pilla.
I say pilla, and I say dala.
Yeah. But pilla's the real West Virginia one.
I don't know where the... Yeah. Roof.
Anyway. So county deputies show up, and Dennis told them of his suspicions, because he's not wet. Dennis isn't wet at all, and he claims to have been into the creek up to his chest. So by the next day, county authorities have already closed the case, labeling it an accident, despite the fact that they don't have a body. So Dennis is able to collect the life insurance, and it has a double indemnity clause, which you may or may not know means if she dies by accident, he gets double the money, which I think is bizarre. That's like
a movie.
Slot
there's a double. There's a movie called Double Indemnity with Barbara Stanwyck and Fred McMurray.
Oh, was that a Hitchcock? Double Indemnity? It was, right?
Yes,
it's Hitchcock. We never learn what the amount is. I suspect it will sound underwhelming in current money, but remember, this is 1975. So on his own time, Dan LaFramboise, I think that means strawberries, or in French, framboise is raspberry. Raspberry, strawberry. Framboise is one of those.
Oh, look at you!
Yeah. So in his own time, Dan teams up with Leslie's parents to look for a body, and they never find one. And Dan believes that this is a murder. They just can't prove it.
I thought all the time there was something like that it wasn't right. He wasn't telling the truth, or he wasn't telling the whole story.
So Dennis collects
the circumstances. Back to the creek.
Yeah.
Under the circumstances, when the water is swollen, when the water is not swollen, the creek is only several inches to a couple feet deep. You can walk across most of the way.
Mm-hmm.
So during the thaw season, when the snow and everything, it is a rushing torrent. It is it is rapids. It is this. So the concept is that that when she fell in the water, it whisked her away and washed her all the way down. And while believable, it seemed unlikely.
A little suspect. And later on, when they bring him back much later to explain it, it doesn't make sense. But he collects the life insurance and literally moves on with his life. And he moves to Dexter, Maine. It's now August 1987. So this is 12 years later. And he has run a personal ad that reads thusly. Construction worker, 37 years old, 5'7", 135 pounds, active outdoorsman, seeks compatible childless lady, 22, 35 years old, for lasting relationship. Reply to advertiser box L35 Bangor.
Look at that.
26-year-old Kathy Frost responds to the ad. Did you notice above Dennis's ad, there's one from a man advertising saying, "I will drive your car to Florida in September. Excellent driver's record, mature man."
That used to be a thing.
It was. Within 3 weeks, Dennis proposes, and a week later, they are married.
I just can't.
Can you believe it?
Well, in my research, it turns out that Kathy was pretty...
screwed up.
No. Listen to you. She just wanted to be loved.
Yeah.
She just wanted to be loved. And so she had low self-esteem, and she was kind of a what is it when you're like a downer, Debbie Downer, uh-huh. She was a Debbie Downer kind of a girl. Uh-huh. So for her, this was like, oh.
I can't believe it. Finally, it's my time. So a week after he proposes, 3 weeks after they meet, they're married a week later, the day after the marriage, he takes out a life insurance policy with a double indemnity clause on her, and he will get $250,000 if she dies by accident.
And of course, she has no idea
about the first wife.
In my research, she had no idea he had been married two times before.
Oh, he'd been married
twice before? This is the third marriage. Oh,
so one of them got away.
His first wife washed away in the creek. His second wife divorced him. And it's not mentioned in this at all, but he's got, I think, three kids floating around.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Father of the year. 3 weeks after they're married. Now, this is just 7 weeks after they met. They're in Acadia National Park, which is on the coast of Maine, and it has very high cliffs. And wouldn't you know it, she falls off of one. So it's October 11th, 1987, and a call comes into the ranger station. This is Boyd McFarland from the National Park Service.
We received a call on the park radio of a report of a woman falling off the cliffs. They called up our communications office, who notified me.
So Dennis told McFarland that they were on the cliffs looking for otters, which that doesn't make any sense.
Well, these murderers really think these things through. I'm going to get married, and we're only going to be together a couple weeks, and I'm going to throw you off a cliff.
Jesus Christ.
So I think the idea of otters in the water in itself...
Just shooting from the hip.
Really.
So he said they're looking for otters. He heard a scream. He turned around and she was gone. So McFarland can see her down below on the rocks, sprawled out. First responders get there, but they are unable to revive her. She's dead. So again, it's labeled an accident, but a phone call to Kathy's mother, who looks like the very embodiment of a woman, of a Down East woman,
says there's
no way her daughter would have been up there. She is terrified of heights.
And water.
I'm with you.
Deep down in my heart, something was wrong. Something happened that wasn't natural. Because she hated heights. And I know she wouldn't have been up there on that mountain. She wouldn't have done it if she wasn't made to do it.
So Kathy's mom shares her concerns with the park rangers, not only about her fear of heights and the insurance, but she has also learned that Dennis's first wife had died accidentally as well.
See, this is something I don't understand. They know that they are aware that there was another wife,
mm-hmm.
but they don't know that there's two former wives.
Right.
Nobody knows that, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow there's rumors that his first wife died.
Mm.
How would he have told?
How did they get there?
Who he told? He babbled. He told somebody.
He must have said something. It must have come from him, right? So the Maine State Police are brought in. And Detective Jeff Harmon takes the case, and he speaks with Kathy's mom, and he and another detective come to the conclusion that he not only killed his first wife, but he has most likely killed his second wife. We think it's a second wife. It's actually
his third. Right, it's actually his third, but, you know, yeah.
So they bring him in for an interview, and they decide to put the heat on him. There was some unusual bruising on Kathy's body that was not consistent with her fall. So let's hear Dennis try to weasel out of this. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, there's marks there. Kathy didn't put those marks on herself. And there's nobody else there but you and her. And we discussed before.
Okay, look, I know that those marks are there because I can see them.
That's right.
So all I can do is theorize as to what happened because...
The marks are there, Dennis.
Yeah.
She's
ready to fall, right? Why couldn't she go like that?
They're not caused by her.
How do you know?
Dennis... They are not caused by her.
So he's terrible at it.
And the human body amazes me in the sense that, so obviously there was a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
He had her to the cliff. He was trying to push her over and she struggled. So he had to grip her strong enough to leave prints on her skin.
Right.
So
that the stuff they can glean from a body like really, that, like, this is inconsistent.
And I'm like, so imagine she's terrified. So this woman is terrified of heights and terrified of water.
Mm-hmm.
She's on a cliff side and she can figure, she's just figured out her husband's trying to
just
push
to get her
there.
I bet you he had to battle with her just to get her all the way up onto that cliff. You know what I mean? I don't think she would have been there willingly at all.
Well, he told the story. I think he's told it in different ways, but they got there and they were going there to look for otters. And then they went up different ways. Uh-huh. They weren't like together.
That's bullshit.
And that's another thing the mother was like, absolutely not. Bullshit. She wasn't a hiker. She wouldn't have done any of these things. She was a little heavy.
It's fucked up.
She wouldn't have done
that. He thought he was just going to shoot from there and get away with this.
Well, obviously these people.
He got away with it the other time.
He got away with it. Yeah. Actually, he would have gotten away with the first time scot free if he hadn't done this
one. If he hadn't done it again. I almost think of this, he's not too different from being a serial killer. You know what I mean? That's exactly what he is. Except he is.
He's doing it for the money.
He's getting it for the money instead of the thrill of killing. But if there was any doubt about where Detective Harmon is from, we hear it in his audio, and he is a dyed-in-the-wool native of Maine. So Harmon isn't letting up, and Dennis keeps saying, you know, I don't know why those bruises are there, but he eventually realizes that the detective isn't going to back down, so he comes up with this scenario, and this is where they've got him.
There was a dramatic change in the story from started out being purely an accident to there being an argument to there being an argument with a physical confrontation.
I guess we went down by the cliff and she says, I don't love you anyway, and gave me a push. And it pissed me off enough to where I gave her a push. And we weren't all that close to the cliff, but I pushed her hard enough to where she stumbled backwards and went off and scraped her belly and fell over the cliff.
So now she hasn't fallen. He has actually pushed her.
It's so amazing. It's so amazing to me, all these real life interviews. And it's like, no, I was never there. Well, I kind of went there. What do you mean you kind of went? Well, I went at 1 o'clock, but I was only there for like a minute.
Uh-huh.
Oh, but then you were there for 45 minutes. Well, okay.
It was more like 45 minutes.
And it's just like, if you're innocent. If you're guilty, the second you tell one lie, it's done.
Yeah,
you're done. You're done.
He's no good at this. And she's fallen. He actually pushed her. At this point, it jumps around a bit, but he's arrested for insurance fraud while the detectives work on getting him extradited back to Maine. At some point, he has left Maine. The following year, Dennis tells the same story to a judge in Maine. That picture of the courtroom looked like it was straight out of Murder, She Wrote. Did you see how quaint it was?
It was all oak. All the furniture was oak.
There were doilies on the backs of the chairs.
Yeah.
So as we know, it's a bench trial because there's no jury. It's just the judge, and she gives him 50 years. That's not enough for Kathy's mom.
Good.
I wanted to get life. I was kind of disappointed the judge gave him 50 years, but that's better than 20.
So he's locked up and sent to Maine's Holliston State Prison. Now, I looked up Holliston State Prison, and we'll talk about it once we're done here.
Yeah.
We now see him giving testimony in the year 2000, which is 15 years after all this went down.
Right.
13. And he's describing what happened with his first wife, how he pushed her into the creek, and she got tangled up in a tree, and she drowned right there. I don't know why he's doing this. Maybe if you found anything out about why
he... I have some possible, yes.
I found a spot along the creek that there was a large tree that had fallen down into the creek, and the water was rising up pretty bad, and I pushed her in at that point, and she got tangled up in the limbs and couldn't come up for air because the stream was rushing by too quick, and she drowned right there.
3 months after this testimony, he is in that prison in Maine, Holliston. Dennis's body is found at the bottom of the quarry at the prison. I guess the prisoners are pounding rocks like old school. We're going to be pounding rocks.
I think it's old school hard labor.
Right.
So it's by a rock quarry. So they're mining rock. That's what they're doing. Yeah.
He has a clothespin on his nose and duct tape wrapped around his mouth with the word Geronimo written on it, and they label it a suicide. The other prisoners killed him. You know, somebody killed him.
You don't commit suicide like that. I agree. The first time I heard that, I was like, somebody killed him.
Yeah.
But there are witnesses saying that he did it himself. He climbed up on a table and jumped out the window.
Those are witnesses trying to keep the other guys from getting in trouble.
Right. Because it was from a craft room.
Yeah, they're covering up the crime.
They were in a craft room that had an open window that went over the... It was the quarry that they had turned into a baseball field, which is even hilarious.
Yeah.
If you think about it, like, you know... So he fell out of the building, and there's nothing but hard rock down there. No,
he was killed. The witnesses saw somebody... They were in on it. They wanted him dead. He killed two women. So that Holliston State Prison, they closed it in 2004. They bulldozed the building, and they just shoved it into the quarry. Well, and then they put grass over it. It's a state park now.
Well, that's nice.
The pictures of that jail, penitentiary,
yes.
Terrifying. Old school, you know, bars. The toilet is stainless steel. There is a stool that's bolted to the side of the wall, and then there were two stainless steel bunks, and they were about 4 feet wide.
I don't think I could do it. I don't think I could go to prison.
No, it was kind of known for its inhumane conditions.
Well, also, it's in fucking Maine. Yeah. Isn't it?
It was apparently freezing in winter.
What was it? Shawshank?
It made Shawshank look pretty good. And again, if he would have gotten away with the first one, he got greedy and tried doing it again.
Right.
So you've got a couple things.
I've got to touch the table. I'm being very careful. I got to touch the table.
Trying. It's very difficult for you because you like to gesticulate. Part Italian.
That sounds rude. So he was already serving the 50-year sentence in Maine for murdering his third wife, and then he was charged with killing his first wife
from
the 25 years before. Mm-hmm. So he is accused of murdering. So he was serving his 50-year sentence in Maine when they charged him with the killing of his first wife from the 25 years before.
Right.
He committed suicide in prison in 2000 because he was worried that after he finished serving his sentence in Maine, they would extradite him to Montana to serve the time all over again in the other state.
I don't believe it. I'm saying
that's what they're
saying,
because apparently there was a note and blah blah blah. But that's part of the thing. So this murder like suicide was whether it was forced or not. Well, the rumor was is that he didn't want to go to Montana. He didn't want to be extradited to Montana.
Well, nobody wants to go to Montana. Go to Montana to visit.
Okay, go to Montana. Mm-hmm. Apparently, there's really good steak there.
Yeah, there is.
Okay, so now this is unconfirmed, and I could not find anything else about it. According to a report published in the Great Falls Tribune, a couple renovating a building in Great Falls, Montana, that was formerly owned by Larson, recently found bones underneath a bathroom floor. The bones have been sent to the Montana State Crime Lab to determine if they are human or, you know, to try to identify them and whether they would be.
Oh, is it possible that's Leslie?
Well, I guess, but because he'd already served his time or he was in jail and he was dead and whatever, they didn't bother because I could not find anything. I could not find if they identified those bones. But I did find out that the area that this bathroom was in was a garage.
Uh-huh.
And it had a dirt floor underneath. So the dirt floor where the bones were, and then there was...
You know what he could have done? He could have killed her at the house, hidden her body there, gone down to the creek, and then come up. She may never have even been there.
Correct, because you remember What's-His-Face said there was only one set of tracks.
Right. No. Yeah, he's like, he would have had to have carried her down and carried her back.
Right.
So I bet you he just killed her there and put her under the house.
Possibly. And it just took all that time for them to find it. And because when the house was remodeled, they found bones. So, but there, I could not find any information on whether the bones had ever been identified.
Yeah, that's a shame. Either it doesn't change anything, you know. You know, he killed her. That's something though. Insurance is a weird thing. I'm glad we have it. I have a coworker, and I meet with her on Google. She is in Montana. Our little group of three editors. We have a weekly meeting, and I'm here in Washington, she's in Montana, and the other one is in Portland, Oregon. And we get on, and I'm like, the miracle of Google Meet. We're connected across, you know, three time zones is the craziest thing.
I guess because he had it looked like he had a clean record, no one thought that he was, you know,
dirty.
The question of whether he was murdered. But he did have a felony theft in Montana, a prior record for that. That had carried a suspended sentence. So everybody thought he was a law-abiding citizen and all this, but he did have a suspended sentence for a felony theft.
That's not so bad. That's not really an indicator of
a
homicidal maniac.
That's true. So if I understand this correctly, the day after they were wed, they...
In Maine,
they met with the Allstate Insurance at Sears in Bangor Mall.
Sears again, goddammit. Yeah.
That's not, Sears was all purpose. They purchased a combined universal life insurance policy of $300,000 coverage on him and $200,000 on her with a double indemnity for accidental death.
So he would have gotten $400,000.
Correct. So okay. They named each other the primary beneficiaries and prepaid the policies for 2 months.
That's fishy as fuck. 2 months. I'm only going to insure you for 2 months because I've pretty sure something's going to happen to you.
And I guess one of the things...
Does that make any sense?
Well, you know. So the other thing is that he contacted the insurance agent to reduce the face amounts of the policy and set up a meeting for Monday, October 12th to meet and discuss the changes. So I don't know whether he's like, well, we're banking on this and then we're going to, you know, do this and then we're going to...
I don't understand. He reduced the... before he killed her, he reduced the coverage?
I think before he killed her, he called her and made arrangements to come in and talk about reducing the rates.
You know what that was? He's setting a kind of a believable, like, correct. I was going in to reduce the rates on her.
Right,
and then
she
fell. So that's all that was. It was a smokescreen.
Right.
So we're not buying it, Dennis.
So the other thing is the at the Cliffs, they went up initially on a Saturday, but according to him, it was too crowded, and they decided to return the next day.
Too many witnesses.
Right. And the next day, and that night at work, Kathy had told a friend she was depressed about her marriage and that it was at least better than being alone. She also told her that the friend that she planned to return to the park with Larson on Sunday.
Yeah. He didn't want witnesses.
Right.
That's why it was too crowded. That's kind of like dating reminds me why it's preferable to die single. you shared it was with...
It was very funny. A friend of his testified that the defendant... some 9 years earlier in conversation with him, had outlined a scheme of marrying foreign women, purchasing life insurance on them, arranging their death, and collecting the proceeds for the insurance.
How many times do we hear about these?
But that guy, I can't believe you'd tell people.
The guy who killed his wife, and he cut off her head,
right.
And he put her bodies down the wells in Tennessee.
Right.
And he's like, he told a friend of his exactly what he would do to his wife if she ever tried to leave him. And that's exactly what he did.
Well,
so this guy's another one. These killers, they tell people what they tell a friend, they tell a confidant, you know, I'm going to do this, and then boom.
I already said that her Frost family said she is not outdoorsy. She was an extremely desperate, lonely individual who was unable to get a man. She didn't like to swim. She didn't like the outdoors. She didn't like any of this stuff. So the fact that she met a guy who said he was an outdoorsman and they got married that quickly,
yeah,
it's pretty interesting. Okay, so the paperwork that came through said that he was divorced from his first wife, which was actually his second wife, and that he was paying child support for 2 children. So there are at least 2 children, but I thought the first woman had a baby. So I think
he might not be responsible for that.
Right. Larson had a 4-month-old child when his first wife died in the creek accident. So that's 3 kids.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those, you know, things.
I don't think he cared. I don't think he was probably a very good father.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just going out on a limb.
Now, this one didn't make any sense to me, and there was no other information on this. Shortly after the memorial service for his wife, for his first wife, he was admitted to the hospital for an undisclosed reason. When he was released from the hospital, he was going to fly to Montana, and he was stopped and searched. He had sealed boxes that were detonated in case of explosives, but only had tools and clothes in them.
That's fucking weird.
They found 6.5 sticks of dynamite in his garage.
That's weird.
Exactly. That's weird. And that's the only mention of it.
That's
I
fishy.
Couldn't find it anyplace else.
That's weird.
So I would think that would lead me to believe that he was trying to destroy evidence. He was trying to take the dynamite to destroy evidence. So who knows?
Weird.
I don't know.
Well, that's the twisted tale of a guy using life insurance to pad his life. I don't know.
Oh, I had something about the first wife that died, the life insurance was only $20,000.
Oh. Okay.
So the first wife, he killed her for $20,000.
Unbelievable. Well, anyway, that's the sad tale. Thank you guys for listening.
Yeah.
Like, share, subscribe.
Yeah, like, share, subscribe. Tell all your friends about it.
Get life insurance, but don't kill people.
Yeah.
Right?
Au revoir.
Get it in Sears.
Get it in Sears. The ass will be. The girl can't help it. She's in love with me. Can't help it. The girl can't help it.